regarding said amendments will occur thereafter.
This is Phil Donahue, and you're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5.
What's the frequency, Kenneth?
And has the jury reached a verdict as to each count of the information?
Yes, we have,
Your Honor.
I'm Paul Fisher.
Yes.
Would you hand all of the paperwork to the bailiff, please?
This is the one that he did.
Remember when we used to have slow news weeks for the holidays?
Is it face the jury and hearken to its verdicts?
Yeah, me neither.
H. Rittenhouse, not guilty. As to the second count of the information, Richard McGinnis, we the jury find the defendant, Kyle H. Rittenhouse, not guilty. As to the third count...
In the aftermath of the Rittenhouse verdicts, we also got final arguments before the trial of three white men in Georgia in the killing of Ahmaud Arbery went to that jury.
So what is the defense? I mean, I'm just going to take it right down there. We talked about that. What is the defense? We got self-defense. What is that? Well, they're going to try and convince you that Ahmaud Arbery was the attacker, that he was somehow threatening to them. Three on one, two pickup trucks, two guns. Mr. Arbery, nothing in his pockets. Not a cell phone, not a gun, not an ID. They want you to believe that he is the danger to them. And Mr. Rubin said it in the opening statement. He was scary.
We talked with you also about intermediate weapons, weapons retention, and the use of deadly force. Travis spent a long time going through these things in his testimony. If you recall, I was writing feverishly as he was testifying so that I could capture what it was that he had to share with us about these things. It includes what gave him the right to search, examine, arrest, seize, inspect, inquire. He talked with you about the level of suspicion by a reasonable and prudent person given the overall circumstances to believe that crime has been committed. Probable cause.
So, here's the thing. They're going to try to claim that they were justified in their actions. Okay? Because here's the thing, ladies and gentlemen. You cannot claim self-defense under certain circumstances. You can't.
Thank you.
you to say I was acting in self-defense, and there's three of them.
Spirit touch me down.
And it's the law. This isn't just something made up. There's three of them in the law, okay? Initial unjustified aggressor, you don't get a claim self-defense.
Your laws make you scared of changes. They're with you always through love.
If you're committing a felony against somebody, you don't get a claim self-defense. And the third one is if you provoke somebody so that they defend themselves against you. And then you go, oh, look, he attacked me first. But you really were the one who was provoking the attack on yourself. You don't get a claim self-defense. And that's the law. So, here's the problem.
My heart is on the ground.
They're going to try and claim they were justified in starting this in their driveways. They're going to try and claim they were justified in committing all these felonies against Mr. Arbery. How? Because they're going to try and convince you that this was a citizen's arrest. That's what they're going to do.
Your laws make you scared of changes. Promise you'll be okay.
But here is what a citizen's arrest really is, okay? This is what the law says. This is the statute, and the judge is going to give it to you. A private person may arrest an offender if the offense is committed in his presence. Right here, right now, I'm seeing you do it, okay? Right here, right now, I'm watching you commit the crime. I'm witnessing it. You're doing it in my presence. So what's the problem for the defendants? Well, we all know that Mr. Bryan's on his porch fixing it. Where's Travis McMichael? He's on the sofa inside the house. Where's Greg McMichael? This all started when I saw him running down the street. Now, it also says that within his immediate knowledge, well, the judge is going to charge you that that's synonymous. It means the same thing. But immediate knowledge and in your presence is the exact same thing. In order to make an arrest of an offender, the offense has to be committed in the private citizen's presence. Do we have that here?
Verdict is as follows. In Superior Court of Glynn County, State of Georgia, State of Georgia versus Travis McMichael, case number CR000433. Jury verdict form. Count one, malice murder. We, the jury, find the defendant, Travis McMichael, guilty.
If you try to go where you don't belong, you
count one, malice murder. We, the jury, find the defendant, Greg McMichael, not guilty. Count two, felony murder. We, the jury, find the defendant, Greg McMichael, guilty. Count three, felony murder. We, the jury, find the defendant, William R. Bryan, guilty.
House GOP leader Kevin McCarthy doesn't like questions about how his caucus wants to punish the 13 Republicans who voted for roads and bridges, but won't punish the likes of Marjorie Taylor Greene and Paul Gosar for attacks on Democrats, real or anime fantasy attacks. In fact, McCarthy just adds to their litany of grievances and grudges, says he'll retaliate whenever the GOP retakes control of the House by throwing Democrats off committee assignments. And a will give Green and Gosar even better committee assignments than the ones they lost. Of course, this only makes reporters like Garrett Hake seek clarification from Kevin McCarthy.
Yes.
Why is it that the only thing Republicans will punish one of their own members for in this Congress is speaking out against Donald Trump?
How is it? I don't understand your question.
The only Republican member who's been in any way punished by the conference this year is Liz Cheney, who lost.
I'm sorry, did she lose a committee?
She lost her role in the Republican conference. I know you were there.
Well, that's an election. She didn't get punished by that. She lost an election. I'm sorry. People go up for election all the time. No basis there.
Why do Republicans feel compelled to hold any kind of punishment for any of their members on any of these other things, which Democrats have been so upset about?
Really?
I guess McCarthy forgot the GOP caucus unelected Liz Cheney from the House GOP leadership for supporting the investigation of the January 6th attack on the Capitol. But then again, these are the same people who will tell you with a straight face that Gosar's anime execution of AOC was just a cartoon. Try to pull the plug on Sesame Street. And tell you Big Bird should be carved up for Thanksgiving for getting a COVID shot. And they'll rail against the introduction of a new Muppet who is depicted as being from Asia. You spell hypocrite?
In the meantime, perhaps he could clear up from his proposals.
Let me in, you cowards, let me in. I swear you're gonna like me.
From his proposals, whether he would continue to be able to take money as he did from Mishkon Daraya and other legal firms.
Oh, the Prime Minister.
You cowards, let me in. You don't know nobody like me.
As you know, and I do remind you, it's Prime Minister's question, not Leader of the Opposition's question. Keir Starmer.
That's not an apology. Everybody else has apologized for him, but he won't apologize for himself.
Have you noticed it? The House of Representatives is sounding more like the House of Commons.
Something is missing in your life. What if it's been me all this time?
McCarthy has been borrowing a page from Jim Jordan in recent days. Talk loud, talk fast, and maybe nobody will notice the outrage in your voice is meaningless nonsense.
The loneliness gnawing at your heart has also been gnawing mine. You need a better mind.
Sure, at least McCarthy isn't posting anime executions of Democrats, But he does seem to be trying to talk Democrats to death.
Mr. Speaker, I remember back when Jimmy Carter was president. I wanted to go...
There's no such thing as a filibuster in the House, but McCarthy went on for 8 hours, extending the magic minute floor speech rules, trying to delay the vote by Democrats to approve part two of the Biden agenda, the human infrastructure bill.
I can look anywhere I want, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I cannot believe the amount of control one-party rule wants. They now want to dictate to a member of the floor of where I can look. Are you afraid of the basis of the information in the bill? Sir, I'm gladly to look at you, Mr. Speaker. There's a difference between addressing and looking. I know one party rule wants to control every element of our lives.
Yeah, I know everyone is moving house or going back home.
When all was said and done, and a lot got said, Democrats took the human infrastructure to a vote.
And with respect for those who work in this Capitol, and as a courtesy to my colleagues, I will be brief.
We're unhappy, but we had everything we could want. These days we just do so much, but it's never enough.
The House will be in order. On this vote, the yeas are 220, the nays are 213. The Build Back Better bill is passed.
This is legislation that creates millions of good paying jobs, gives tax cuts to the middle class. Lowers cost, especially health care cost and child care cost for the middle class, and is paid for 100%. And again, we're very excited about what it does for the children, for the families.
And you could run till you're not.
And it's, again, if you're a mom, a dad, a family caregiver, or the rest, this bill's for you. If you care about the planet and how we pass it on to our children, as this bill's for you.
Senate Democrats will be fighting about the House version of the bill, and Manchin will want changes and delays, omitting paid family leave for one thing. So it's likely that if and when the Senate does vote, It'll send the House a different version, and the differences will need to be ironed out before final passage.
I want to work with Senator Manchin on some ideas he has. He likes employer-employee contribution systems. A lot of states around the country already have that through unemployment insurance, through disability insurance. There's ways we might be able to create this program.
Like the state of New York.
Correct. And what Senator Manchin is doing right now is he's approving every aspect of the Build Back Better proposal about how to pay for it. So he's in the driver's seat on how to pay for these proposals. And so I'm just hopeful that he can remain open-minded to include some provisions for paid leave, because this is the only moment to get paid leave done. The bipartisan ideas he has, they will not come to fruition with the Republican senators that are interested in paid leave today, because they aren't interested today in a universal plan that's an earned benefit, because I've spoken to them. So that's why I think for Senator Manchin, now is the time. If he has a vision for what he wants to do,
yes,
putting in this Dem-only proposal is the only opportunity in my
opinion. Now that it's passed the House,
pardon me,
the Build Back Better plan, now that it's passed the House, when do you expect it to land on your desk?
What's I don't know. It's going to take a while to go through the Senate. I think it'll probably be after Thanksgiving. I will sign it, period.
Senate Republicans are increasingly turning to the attack dog tactics of McCarthy. Not just Kevin McCarthy, but Senator Joe McCarthy from the 50s. At a confirmation hearing for Comptroller of the Currency nominee Soli Omarova, Senator Kennedy of Louisiana actually tried a communist smear tactic against her. Because she was born in the Soviet Union and grew up there.
What were you thinking when they pulled you over in the Lincoln?
Becoming a law professor who specializes in regulating financial institutions. In other words, an economist.
With a busted tail.
No, not communist, economist.
But I don't mean any disrespect. I don't know whether to call you professor or comrade.
Oh, my goodness. But they found everything in all the places.
Senator, I'm not a communist. I do not subscribe to that ideology. I could not choose where I was born. I do not remember joining any Facebook group that subscribes to that ideology. I would never knowingly join any such group. There is no record of me ever actually participating in any Marxist or communist discussions of any kind.
last time I saw you, I was wearing...
My family suffered under the communist regime. I grew up without knowing half of my family. My grandmother herself escaped death twice under the Stalin regime. This is what seared in my mind. That's who I am. I remember that history. I came to this country. I'm proud to be an American. And this is why I'm here today, Senator. I'm here today because I'm ready for public service.
Banking Committee Chair Senator Brown and Banking Committee Member Elizabeth Warren called out the attack on the nominee. And pointed out what's really going on here with the smear campaign.
Thank you, Professor. I check with my staff, Senator Kennedy. I've never interrupted you or they believe anybody.
Well, that's not
their question,
Mr. Chairman. And I'm entitled to ask my questions.
And you were.
I didn't interrupt you when you gave your introduction, and I don't like being interrupted when I'm asking my questions.
Senator Kennedy, I heard.
It's called senatorial courtesy.
I understand that, and there's also senatorial courtesy.
And you may disagree with me. That's why you have 5 minutes and I have 5 minutes.
Senator Kennedy, senatorial courtesy. He's also not doing character assassination. I heard Senator Scott.
Well, that's your opinion.
30
Chair.
Minutes
that's
ago.
That's not my opinion.
30 minutes ago, I heard Senator Scott.
Me, but I'm entitled to answer questions without you interrupting me. You and I don't agree. I still like you. We're friends.
Sorry to report my en route was interrupted here in Garza County. Hopefully I won't go to the pen. All right. Have good shows.
You have the right to your opinion, but I've got the right to mine. And you can't just interrupt me when I'm asking my question.
You still got a full five minutes.
And you've done it before.
Senator Scott, just a moment ago, said nobody on his side has done any kind of communist insinuation of her character and her background. He just said that, so I'm hopeful that Senator Scott and maybe perhaps Senator Tillis or Senator Toomey or Senator Kramer will call out those people that do character.
Would you not think Senator
Warren is
a member of the Young Communists?
I'm not here to answer your question, Senator. Kennedy, Senator Warren is recognized for 5 minutes from Massachusetts.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Professor Omarova, I know that the giant banks object to your willingness to enforce the law to keep our system safe and that you may cut into big bank profits. So they and their Republican buddies have declared war on you. The attacks on your nomination have been vicious and personal. We've just seen them. Sexism, racism, pages straight out of Joe McCarthy's 1950s Red Scare tactics. It is all there on full display. Welcome to Washington in 2021. Now, one claim is that you intend to nationalize the banking system. So let's just get this nonsense out of the way. Does the OCC have the power to end private banking and to move all consumer deposits to a public ledger?
Absolutely not.
If the OCC did have that power, is that something you would support?
Absolutely not.
Capitalist who believes in free markets?
Yes, I am.
Mm-hmm. Now that we've put that on the record, I'd like to get to the real reason that your nomination has generated such fierce opposition. And I think it lies in what the OCC does have the power to do. Professor Omarova, the OCC oversees a mix of giant banks and smaller community banks. Now, the giant banks are flourishing and growing larger by the day. And big tech companies like Facebook are trying to move in, while many of the smaller banks are getting wiped out.
Hello, I'm Dan Rather, and you're listening to What's the Frequency, Kenneth? With musical host Paul Fisher in New York City.
How would you support community banks?
I was born to
and ensure that they can continue to provide strong service to their customers and competition in the banking industry.
Thank you, Senator. If confirmed as the comptroller, I would make one of my priorities to take a much closer look and subject to much closer scrutiny the ongoing trend of consolidation in the banking industry. Many communities without meaningful access to banking services on the ground.
GOP leader Kevin McCarthy just can't do enough to prove his loyalty to Trump. But he doesn't seem to realize it doesn't go both ways. McCarthy can't hide his burning ambition to be House Speaker. But he had to notice it when Trump's former White House Chief of Staff, Mark Meadows, went on the podcast of fellow subpoena refuser Steve Bannon and said flat out he has someone else in mind for House Speaker, not Kevin McCarthy.
I would love to see the gavel go from Nancy Pelosi to Donald Trump. You're talking about melting down. People would go crazy. As you know, you don't have to be an elected member of Congress to be the speaker. Wouldn't you see she would go from tearing up a speech to having to give the gavel to Donald Trump? Oh, she would go crazy.
Speaking of Trump loyalists, the January 6th committee has issued new subpoenas focused on rally organizers that day. Among those summoned, Roger Stone and Alex Jones.
Watch the TV shows.
poisoning the well of politics as a deliberate tactic goes well beyond Congress and campaigning. No surprise, considering how the Trumpers and their fake claims of election fraud led to death threats and intimidation aimed at the people who supervise elections. Remember?
To be clear, President Joe Biden won Arizona in a free and fair election, which was conducted according to the letter of the law. In Arizona, there were at least 9 post-election legal challenges. And although every challenge failed, as the lawsuits mounted, so did the threats against me and other election officials. Two weeks after the election, armed protesters gathered outside my home and chanted, "Katie, come out and play. We are watching you." I never expected that holding this office would result in far-right trolls threatening my children, threatening my husband's employment at a children's hospital, or calling my office saying I deserve to die and asking, "What is she wearing today?" so she'll be easy to get. These threats have continued against me and others. But what concerns me more is the near constant harassment faced by the public servants who administer our elections. Nearly every day, they are on the receiving end of abusive phone calls and emails. In Arizona, orange jumpsuits were mailed to county supervisors. Last November, as election workers tabulated ballots inside the Maricopa County Tabulation Center, armed protesters were a frequent presence outside. We're already seeing high turnover among election staff, and I fear that many more will reach a breaking point and decide that this line of public service is no longer worth it.
In Philadelphia, the commissioners oversee all election operations in the city, from voter registration to election certification. I am a Republican, and I believe that counting votes in our democracy is a sacred responsibility. For doing my job, counting votes, I'd like to quickly share with you some of the messages sent to me and my family. Tell the truth or your 3 kids will be fatally shot. Included our address, included my children's names, included a picture of our home. Cops can't help you. Heads on spikes, treasonous Schmitz. You betrayed your country. You lied. You're a traitor. Perhaps cuffs and bullets will soon arrive at provides my address, names my children, Rhino stole election, we steal lives. There are additional threats that my family asked me not to share today because they are so graphic and disturbing. And let's be clear, this is domestic terrorism. The whole point is to terrorize, to intimidate, and to coerce, and to prevent our democracy from functioning as it should.
In Kentucky, we election officials were subject to a misinformation campaign that resulted in numerous threats of violence and other verbal abuse. The so-called All Eyes on Kentucky effort directed against us did not come from conservatives concerned about voter fraud. It came from progressives duped into believing that we were engaged in voter suppression. Worse, this misinformation effort was given oxygen by senior figures within the National Democratic Party. I remain grateful to our Democratic governor for defending our state and calling out these lies.
Today, I want to talk about how these threats to election administration are ultimately about denying people their freedom to vote. threats to their lives as a job-related concern. It is simply unconscionable that after showing up during a pandemic to deliver democracy to voters, election officials and workers are now the target of vicious attacks. Threats have devastating consequences, not only for the people in danger, but for democracy
itself. Record turnout and a smooth election day validated election officials' incredible work. Their reward for this professionalism and bravery? Months of threats against their lives and the lives of their family members, their staff and their families. For instance, Secretary Barbara Sagaski of Nevada, a Republican, shared with us that she and her family and staff were targeted with death threats regularly and even had drones flown over her house. Or Tina Barton, a local Republican election official from Rochester Hills, Michigan, received death threats, including one that made clear that when she went out in public, she would find a knife at her throat. As the bipartisan Florida Supervisors of Elections recently wrote in a memo to their voters, quote, during and after the 2020 presidential election, the integrity of our democracy has been challenged by misinformation, disinformation, and malinformation that sows discord and undermines trust in America's electoral process. Many of us have been threatened by our fellow citizens who have been led astray by these deceptions. If additional protection is not provided to those who are threatened, many election officials may face the horrible choice of either continuing to receive threats for doing their jobs or leaving the profession.
Wait a minute now, man. Okay, take two.
I was riding on the Mayflower and I thought I spot some land.
The committee will come to order. Welcome to the Select Committee on the Climate Crisis.
Jesus Dick said, boys, forget the wheel. We're going on.
Committee meeting this morning, tribal voices, tribal wisdom, strategies for the climate crisis.
Each of these tribal nations have their own innovative approaches to tackling climate change impacts on their cultural and natural resources. From leading drought contingency efforts to becoming national leaders on clean energy transition and using traditional ecological practices to combat the damages of wildfires.
He said, let's set up a fort and start buying a place with beads. Just then this cop comes down the street, crazy as a loon. It throws us all in jail.
We are located on the southwest corner of the Olympic Peninsula of the state of Washington along the Pacific Ocean.
Me, I busted out. Don't even ask me how. I went to get some help. I walked by Guernsey Cow.
Since time immemorial, my nation has relied on the waters of the Quinault and Queets Rivers and the Pacific Ocean for sustenance and survival.
I jumped right into line, saying I hope that I'm not late. When I realized I hadn't eaten for 5 days straight.
The village of Tohola is the primary population, social, economic, and government center of our nation. In 2012, my nation began developing a master plan for relocation of our residents, businesses, and institutions of Lower Tohola to a new village and higher ground.
Some Suzette, I said, could you please make that crepe? Just then the whole kitchen exploded from boiling fat. Food was flying everywhere. I left without my hat.
We must also be mindful that while we solve these challenges with climate change, it is not at the expense of other aspects of the environment or the standard of living we strive to provide to our tribal members.
Climate change will have lasting impacts on tribal lands, seascapes, waters, and communities. As the First Nations of this continent, tribal nations have witnessed and adapted to changes in the climate that have occurred over millennia.
Well, I wrapped a phony house with the U.S. flag upon display. I said, could you help me out? I got some friends down the way.
However, tribal nations now face a rapidly changing climate while working to protect the health and well-being of our communities, lands, and waters on a fraction of our original homelands.
Before I break your bones, I ain't your pop. I decided to have him arrested and I went looking for a cop.
Despite having almost 21,000 terawatt hours of potential generation capacity, which is more than enough power to power the whole United States multiple times over.
This Englishman said fab as he saw me leap a hot dog stand in a chariot that stood marked across from a building advertising.
There are only two commercial scale renewable energy projects operating on Indian lands.
And a man asked me who I was.
I want to try to end on an optimistic note, but I want to start, President Sharp, with a question for you, and it's a hard question for me to grapple with, and I'm hoping that you've got more wisdom than me on this.
A payphone was ringing, it just about blew my mind. When I picked it up and said hello, this foot came through the line. Time I was fed up at trying to make a step at bringing back any help for my friends.
For not all of the tribes in our country, but for an awful lot of them, the lands they live on are lands that they were forcibly relocated to.
Let me know if I should go back to ship or back to jail. So I hocked my sailor suit and I got a coin to flip.
We moved them off productive land, we moved them to more marginal land, and an awful lot of that land is now areas that in many cases is most at risk of climate change.
Wow, I got back, took the parking ticket off the mast. I was ripping it to shreds when his Coast Guard boat went past. They asked me my name, and I said, Captain Kidd. They believed me, but they wanted to know what exactly that I did. I said, for the Pope of Ebrook, I was employed. They let me go right away. They were very paranoid.
The areas that are harder to obtain water, more at risk of drought, I see nodding your head.
That was married to the deputy sheriff of the jail. But the funniest thing was when I was leaving the bay, I saw three ships sailing. They were all heading my way. I asked the captain what his name was and how come he didn't drive a truck. He said his name was Columbus. I just said good luck.
My question for you is, number one are the programs that we have available in this country for adaptation sufficient for those communities, and can they get access to them?
They took our tongues. They tried to take our tongues. We lost our language, and we didn't.
And number two, to the extent that they are, that those folks are living in areas where the best thing to do is to help folks relocate to a more productive area.
You can't take that from us. You can't take that from us. You can't take our blood. Take that from us.
How can we be most culturally sensitive for communities that have been told by the federal government to move before and maybe a little bit skeptical? And if
you can't have my tongue, Inuvunga. You can't have my tongue. You can't have my
tongue. We welcome your thoughts on both of those questions.
Dukisivunga.
With the hope that I can end with a little bit of time for President Thomas before, or Dr. Thomas, before we're done.
Yes, thank you. And to your first question, adaptation funding is simply not enough. And we need additional resources to begin to not only adapt with new and emerging science and the things that are readily available, but the centuries of knowledge that we have with respect to adaptation and cultivating and developing that with our elders is critically important. To your second question, yes. How can we make those adjustments and moves in a more culturally sensitive way? The one way to do that is to acknowledge that tribal nations should have a decisive say through free, prior, and informed consent on all federal actions.
You can't have my tongue.
When the United States or any other government can take unilateral action without our consent, it puts us in an imperiled position.
The big part of the reason Americans are facing high gas prices is because oil-producing countries and large companies have not ramped up the supply of oil quickly enough to meet the demand. And the smaller supply means higher prices globally for oil. To address these issues, I got on the phone with leaders from other countries grappling with this challenge to try to find ways to lower oil prices and ultimately to the price you pay at the pump. Today, I'm announcing that the largest ever release from the U.S. Strategic Petroleum Reserve to help provide the supply we need as we recover from this pandemic. In addition, I brought together other nations to contribute to the solution. India, Japan, Republic of Korea, and the United Kingdom have agreed to release additional oil from their reserves, and China may do more as well. This coordinated action will help us deal with the lack of supply, which in turn helps ease prices. The bottom line, today we're launching a major effort to moderate the price of oil, an effort that will span the globe in its reach and ultimately reach your corner gas station, God willing. I've worked hard these past few weeks in calls and meetings with foreign leaders, policymakers, to put together the building blocks for today's global announcement. And while our combined actions will not solve the problem of high gas prices overnight, it will make a difference. It will take time, but before long, you should see the price of gas drop where you fill up your tank. And in the longer term, we will reduce our reliance on oil as we shift to clean energy. Facebook page, What's the Frequency, Paul. On it goes. I'm looking forward to the next letter that I'm gonna get from you. For now, here's the short list of the music I played. Started off with String Drift by Field Kid. Spirit by Cleo Soul. Bottle Episode by Mandy Indiana. You Need a Better Mind by Beauty Bill. Good Morning did Never Enough. We heard 70 Seconds Before Sunrise by Paranul Asian Glow Sanos Tamam Kanta. In the Garden by Lands. American Spirits by Cassandra Jenkins. The Repeaters by Crazy Dobermans. Damp Carpet did Northern Motion. We heard TV Shows by Catamaran. Subjugation by Manfear. I Won't Remember by Bryce Dessner and Aaron Dessner. We heard Bob Dylan's 115th Dream by Bob Dylan. Tongues by Tanya Tagok. Whatever Else I Know by Ezekiel Honig and Trevor DeNobla. And in the background now, that's Write a List of Things to Look Forward to by Courtney Barnett. And you've been listening to What's the Frequency, Kenneth. I'm Paul Fisher.
Remember I said with the last words on my lips that I am a revolutionary.